According to that great philosopher, Dr. Seuss, a person is a person no matter how small. Now, in case you've never heard that, it's from his famous philosophy book, Horton Hears a Who. In the book, Horton, who is a rather large elephant with rather large ears, picks up on the sound of the Who's from Whoville. And you may know them from his other philosophy book, How the Grinch Stole Christmas. But in case you aren't aware, Whoville is a tiny village out located on a clover. And once Horton figured out what he was hearing, he accepted responsibility for protecting them, despite mockery from the other animals who could not hear them and couldn't care less about protecting them. Horton understood the meaning of respect, the understanding that someone is important, regardless of their size or what they can do for you. This morning's study is from 1 Timothy 5. It's called Respect. Respect. And it's going to be a two-part sermon. We'll talk about that in just a moment. It's based on the Greek word, most often translated honor, in verse 3. In 1 Timothy 5, verse 3, reading from the New American Standard Version, 1995 version, honor widows who are widows indeed. And that's the word respect or honor. And it's the idea of to fix a value upon or to assign value. Specifically, it's used here of assigning value to a widow indeed, but in the context, it applies to others as well. Now, as we work our way through the text, we're going to divide chapter 5 in half. First half today, we'll cover the little people, those often considered insignificant by the world, but given very high value or held in high esteem by God, and hopefully by believers as well, and specifically in the context, widows, but then it would include also other people, members of the church as well, who are not important in the eyes of the world as far as maybe responsibility or something like that. Let's read verses 1 through 16, verse 75, verses 1 through 16, and then we'll dive into the text. Verse 1 says, "Do not sharply rebuke an older man, but rather appeal to him as a father, to the younger men as brothers, to older women, the older women as mothers, and the younger women as sisters, in all purity. Honor widows who are widows indeed. But if any widow has children or grandchildren, they must first learn to practice piety in regard to their own family and to make some return to their parents, for this is acceptable in the sight of God. Now she who is a widow indeed and has been left alone, and who has been left alone, has fixed her hope on God and continues in entreaties and prayers night and day. But she who gives herself to wanton pleasure is dead even while she lives. Prescribe these things as well so that they may be above reproach. But if anyone does not provide for his own, and especially for those of his household, he has denied the faith and is worse than an unbeliever. A widow is to be put on the list only if she is not less than 60 years old, having been the wife of one man, having a reputation for good works, and if she has brought up children, if she has shown hospitality to strangers, if she has washed the saints' feet, if she has assisted those in distress, and if she has devoted herself to every good work. But refuse to put younger widows on the list, for when they feel sensual desires and disregard of Christ, they want to get married, thus incurring condemnation because they have set aside their previous pledge. At the same time, they also learn to be idle as they go around from house to house, not merely idle, but also gossips and busybodies talking about things not proper to mention. Therefore, I want younger widows to marry, to get married, bear children, keep house, and give the enemy no occasion for reproach. For some have already turned aside to follow Satan. If any woman who is a believer has dependent widows, she must assist them, and the church must not be burdened, so that it may assist those who are widows indeed." In order to truly appreciate Paul's order to respect others, and that's really going to be the title of our lesson this morning and next week as well, particularly respecting the little people in this lesson, we have to look at one more quote. And another quote says this, "I respect you as a person too much to respect your wrong beliefs and actions. The point is, respect does not mean giving high value to every single thing a person says or does. In fact, sometimes respect requires us to challenge or confront people for their bad ideas and harmful behavior. And I say that because respectful rebuke is the first command here in the text, the first point here in the text. In verse 5, he starts off with, "Do not sharply rebuke an older man." Some versions say older man, others say an elder. An older man is the best translation because even though it's the word presbyteros, the Greek word, it basically means just older person. It's used for those who are official elders in a church, but also just older people in general, particularly men. In verse 17, which we'll address next time, he'll address elders who are in positions of power or authority in a local church. Also, notice that he points out four categories here, not just older men. Verse 5, or verse 1, he says, "Do not sharply rebuke an older man, but rather appeal to him as a father." So that's your older man. Then he says to the younger men as brothers, and then to the older women as sisters, and the as mothers, and the younger women as sisters. So he's addressing older, younger, male, female. No one is exempt from respect, and no one is exempt from being respectfully rebuked. Now, the word for rebuke in the text here is an interesting word. It's the word for strike. It's literally the idea of hitting somebody with your fist. And it's added to that word is the word over, so it's the idea of giving somebody a severe beating. But rather than physically striking someone, here it's referring to a metaphorical beatdown with words. Proving the saying that sticks and stones may break my bones, but words will never hurt me isn't strictly true, because harsh words can be harmful. How we say things to people is often just as important as what we say, which is why some versions include the word sharply, to bring in that idea of the overbearing part of the beating. Behind this command to the one rebuking is the fact that sometimes rebuking is necessary. And I want you to notice on the screen, if you can read that, rebuke meaning in the Bible. In the Bible, the word rebuke carries a strong spiritual and moral meaning. It refers to correcting or warning someone when they are doing something wrong, especially in a way that guides them back to the right path. The rebuking, the way of the rebuke, is designed to guide them back to the right path. A rebuke is not meant to insult, but to help a person grow in faith and righteousness. And so there in verse 5, when he says, entreat them, and he says, rather appeal to them in the New American Standard Version, it's entreat or exhort or encourage with authority. And it's a word that comes means come alongside, to encourage, to lift up with authoritative words and with an authoritative message. It's a word that's translated urge back in chapter 1 and verse 3. Paul says to Timothy, as I urged you upon my departure from Macedonia. And then in chapter 2, verse 1, he says, first of all, then I urge. It's the same word of encourage or I appeal to. I appeal to you to do these things. And so he's saying here that rather than prohibiting correction of elderly people or of anyone for that matter, it is an injunction to do so with appropriate, approach. With the idea of coming to them kindly, regardless of their status in the church. So we rebuke with respect, regardless of who's the status one person may have in the church. And these four categories, again, they're comprehensive. I mean, we're binary people in a binary world. Borrow to paraphrase Madonna. We're binary people. Anybody get that for a catch that? Material girl and material world, okay. Anyway, we're binary people in a binary world. That's all there is. All this nonsense about there are multiple genders is nonsense. There are two genders, and there are basically two ages, older and younger, in the broadest sense possible. And what that means is that they are to be respected, and this means that there are standards of belief, also means that there are standards of belief and conduct that deserve to be honored and highly valued just as much as people deserve to be honored and highly valued. And this nail is driven home with a sledgehammer in the rest of the text as he explains that honoring widows is not just about honoring the widows, but others as well, and the people who are involved with them in their lives, individually and collectively. But first of all, why is Paul addressing the issue of widows? Why pick on widows? Think about it for a minute. Widows in most society are the most vulnerable, the most ignored, and considered the most insignificant little people. That's how the world and most cultures look at widows. They just don't think about them. They don't see them. They don't care about them. They're unconcerned at best, or they see them as somebody to be taken advantage of, especially if they have any property or anything that they can take from them. And so that's just a fact of life in most places in the world, and even here in America a lot of times. And in the real world, men are typically bigger and stronger and more aggressive than women. And as a result, they go out and fight the world to protect and provide for women who are typically smaller, weaker, and less aggressive. Give me an illustration of that. You know, people might say James, what about these professional athletes, these women athletes, that they're strong or they're fast? And there are a ton of women athletes that would beat me in a race when I was their age. I was watching a track meet the other day, and they had that 4x400, and it was mixed 4x400, where you have two men and two women. So each person runs a 400-meter lap around the track, and then they hand the baton off to the next person. So a man goes first, and they go back and forth. And one of the biggest issues they have is that every one of those women on that track would just smoke me in a race. When I was their age, they would just smoke me. But the men are so much bigger and so much faster that one of the biggest problems in the race is the handoff. Because the guy is having to stop himself and not run over the woman who cannot get out of the way fast enough because she's just not as fast as he is. They're fast, but the men are faster. And that's just the way it is in nature. And so when the man goes out into the world, typically goes out into the world, and in the process of fighting or working for his wife and children, dies, the wife and the children are left often in poverty and at risk of abuse. And that's why God protects them. God wrote it into the law. Go back to Exodus chapter 22. He wrote it into the law and in the prophets and in the New Testament. In Exodus 22, that's in the middle of Mount Sinai where Moses was receiving the Ten Commandments or the law. In chapter 20, God spoke, or the people heard an audible sound of the voice of God speaking the Ten Commandments, and they said, Moses, you go talk to God. That scares us. You go talk to God. And God says, okay. And he gives them kind of a prologue of the Ten, an expansion on the Ten Commandments, but a prologue on the rest of the law that he's going to give them. In chapter 22, he makes some comments about how they are to treat widows. People who are vulnerable. In 22, beginning down in verse 22 of chapter 22, he says this: "You shall not afflict any widow or orphan." So that's a prohibition of mistreating them. They said, "Don't you dare mistreat widows and orphans." And notice how serious he is about this. God's not joking here. He's not saying, "Yeah, well, you know, be nice to them." He says, "If you afflict him at all," that would be the orphan or the widow, "and if he or she does cry out to me, I will surely hear his cry, and my anger will be kindled. And I will kill you with the sword, and your wives shall become widows, and your children fatherless." So you get the idea that God takes protecting widows pretty seriously? And it's a big deal to him that we are to demonstrate our godliness and our connection to him by how we take care of the vulnerable and the weak and the widows and the orphans. Then in Isaiah, you go flip over to the book of Isaiah chapter 1, Isaiah's first message to the Israelites, and this is prior to the destruction of Samaria, so about 700 years after they gave the law, Isaiah sent by God to tell them, "You guys are doing a terrible job. You're not obeying me, and I'm sending punishment after punishment upon you, and you just don't get it. You're not listening." And then he says in verse 16, But I'm not listening to you because you're sinners. You're sinners. And that's the idea there, is that they're so sinful that God's not giving any attention to them. He's sending more punishment on them. And then he says, if you want to get my attention, if you want to get my favor, here's what you do. Verse 16. Wash yourselves, make yourselves clean, remove the evil of your deeds from my sight, cease to do evil. He says, so stop doing the wrong stuff. Verse 17, learn to do good. Seek justice. Seek justice means do the right thing by people, no matter who they are. Reprove the ruthless. So if somebody has been mistreating other people, rebuke them. In fact, maybe even sharply rebuke them. Defend the orphan. Plead for the widows. So you get the idea that God is protecting widows. And this is not; these are just a very, very handful, select few of the passages making this point. And then if you turn over to the New Testament in the book of James, in James chapter 1, he ends that chapter in verse 27 with this injunction. Pure and undefiled religion, James 1:27, pure and undefiled religion in the sight of our God and Father is this: to visit orphans and widows. And that word visit, the idea of not saying, drive by and saying hi, it's taking care of, actively engaging in care for them in their distress, and to keep oneself unstained from the world. So caring for widows and orphans, caring for the vulnerable, is an important part of the Christian's life. It is essential for them. And the Paul here in 1 Timothy is saying that it's also a part of the local church's responsibility. God values widows. So must we. So must we. However, respect does not mean unlimited, uncritical approval of every widow, because Paul includes the word indeed in the text, or in some versions, real widows. And then he spends the next 12 verses putting three limitations on which widows can be given respect or honor. And they are personal support, age, and character. We'll talk about those in detail here in just a moment. But before we look at this, before we look at these, we do need to understand something. Here, he's switching from the idea of just giving honor and respect to a more specific type or form, and that is of financial support. Providing for the needs of them with monetary or physical support. And it's important for us to understand that the Scripture is very clear that the churches have an obligation to help those in need, help their members that are in need. The very first collection of funds in the New Testament was for needy members. Go back to Acts chapter 2. In Acts 2, the church there in Jerusalem is growing very fast, and they have a lot of people from out of town and a lot of people that are just poor and have widows who are not able to support themselves, have no means of support. And in verse 43, we read this, Acts chapter 2. Everyone kept feeling a sense of awe, and many wonders and signs were taking place through the apostles. Remember, we talked about the apostles being the ones having miraculous powers then. Verse 44. And all those who had believed were together and had all things in common. It wasn't in a commune or anything like this, but notice what he explains it in verse 45. And they began selling their property and possessions and were sharing them with all as anyone might have need. And so people were taking things that they had, selling them. If they didn't have the money available, they would sell property and things like that, and then give it to the church. In chapter 4, we see that they're laying it at the apostles' feet. And then later on, we see that they give it to the elders of the church. And they're using those funds to help support members in need. That's a basic responsibility of the local congregation. And it's the authorization for a collective treasury. There are some people who try to say that we can't have a treasury, but that's what 1 Corinthians 16 verses 1 and 2 is all about, and that's what's happening here in Acts chapter 2. So we have an apostolic example and a command by the Apostle Paul approving of a collective treasury. And there are other authorized uses of a church treasury, but that's a different study for a different time. But this clearly indicates there are divine limits on who can receive church support. Because even if there are members of the church, there are some widows who cannot receive support from the church. And so let's look at these limitations that I mentioned. The first limitation is personal support. And by personal support, I'm talking about family. They have family that can take care of them and provide for them. Look up back in the text there in 1 Timothy chapter 5, and he says this in verse 4. If any widow has children or grandchildren, they must first learn to practice piety in regard to their own family and to make some return to their parents, for this is acceptable in the sight of God. So what God wants is that if a widow has children or grandchildren who are capable of providing for her, it's their duty to do so. I've told the story before, but I'll tell it again. There's a lady, there was a widow in Orlando for a while that was just as sweet as she could be, but she had health problems, and her daughter lived in another state and called and was chewing my wife out, telling her that we weren't doing enough to take care of her mom. And that is our duty to take care of her mom. A couple of problems with that. One is she had plenty of money. Finances wasn't the problem. It was health. She needed health care. She needed somebody there to take care of her. And we had nobody within the church who could do that. But she had plenty of money. And the problem was that if I or any other member had gone into her house and took over her bank account and started using her money to take care of her, the daughter would have been screaming bloody murder and called us thieves. Plus, she was a Christian. She is a member of the Lord's body. And so we pointed out to her that it is her obligation to take care of her mom. And a lot of people were doing a lot of things for her, but she needed somebody there with her 24/7 to take care of it. And we had nobody that could do that. So the family has that first obligation. Verses 7 and 8. He says it again. Prescribe these things as well so that they may be above reproach. But if anyone does not provide for his own, this is the negative side of it, and especially for those of his household, he is denied the faith and is worse than an unbeliever. So what this tells us is that there are distinctions between what the church can do and what the individual can do, and the obligations of the church and the individual. And so if they have the ability, they are to take care of it. Verse 16, he says if they have a daughter could be the one, doesn't have to be a man. If a daughter has the ability to care for her mom or grandmother, if any woman who is a believer has widows, dependent widows, she must assist them. And the church must not be burdened. So this obligation rests upon the individual. They have primary obligation. And there are some other reasons why we would not be able to authorize to provide care for certain widows. One would be if their husband had provided for them through a life insurance policy or some kind of retirement fund that gave them all the money they needed, then it would be wrong for the church to step in and provide for her as well. She has personal support. Same thing if she has her own source of income. If she's wealthy on her own, church has no business stepping in and giving her other people's money. It's not appropriate in that case. So there are limits on who can receive financial support, be a burden on the church. The second limitation is age. Go back to verse 9. A widow is to be put on the list, and that's that idea of an official list of people receiving regular support, only if she is not less than 60 years old. And then in verse 11 he says, refuse to put younger widows on the list. And then goes into some explanations of why. And we don't have the time to explore the details of those verses, but again, this is the limitation God has placed on who the church can provide some financial support to. The third limitation is character. Character. Notice what he says here in verses 5 and 6. Now she who is a widow indeed and who has been left alone has fixed her hope on God and continues in entreaties, prayers night and day. But she who gives herself to want and pleasure is dead even while she lives. So, she's got to be a person who is dedicated to serving God instead of her own pleasure. She's not looking out for herself, not busy figuring out how she can have fun, how she can enjoy life and have all the good things in life and not be busy serving God. Second, she has to be a faithful spouse. Verse 9. A widow is to be put on the list only if she is not less than 60 years old, having been the wife of one man. So she had to be a faithful spouse. A person bouncing around. Isaac mentioned in class and wanted to go through 5 or 6 different spouses because they just bounce from one to the other. That's a problem. Third thing there in the text is she has to have a reputation for devoting herself to the Lord. Verse 10. Having a reputation for good works. And if she has brought up children, if she has shown hospitality to strangers, if she has washed the saints' feet, if she has assisted those in distress, and if she has devoted herself to every good work. So she has to have a reputation of doing good things. So there, she can't be independently wealthy or capable of providing for herself financially. She has to be over a certain age, over 60, and has to have good character. So God is placing limits on who we can provide financial support to. He does not place a limit on who we can provide respect or honor to. We honor all, young, old, male, female. We honor them all and respect them all and treat them with respect. But God has set a limit on who can be supported by the collective organization. But I want us to remember the main thing here is God wants us to honor and provide support for widows indeed. That is our obligation. That is our duty. And it must not be shirked. It must not be something that we try to pass off on other people who don't have that responsibility. So we need to be able to step up when that is. And one of the reasons for the limitation is that in many cases, there are, especially most other cultures, there are a lot of widows. Here, we don't have that many, and most are able to financially care for themselves. But if there were some that needed it, it would be our duty to provide it. Godly churches honor godly widows. And so there we have it. There we have it. A God-respecting church, let's wrap up with this, rebukes when necessary, supports real widows when able, sometimes the church doesn't have the financial ability, and honors divine limitations on collective obligations. Those are the three things we can take away, three practical takeaways from the text here in 1 Timothy 5, 1 through 16. But today is Mother's Day. So we've been talking about widows, a different class of women. Some of them may be mothers, not all of them would be. But this is Mother's Day. And so I can't end our service without giving honor and respect the moms, every one of you that's here today, God bless you for being a mom and for thriving, doing your best to raise godly children, whether they're grown or whether they're just little ones still in diapers. Keep it up. Keep up the work. And us older folks and the older moms, keep encouraging the younger moms. Lend them support and encouragement because it's a hard, hard job. And may all of you moms be godly. Godly moms, and all you dads be godly dads, showing and supporting your wife in the work that she does. The world, and it's sad that today, the world considers motherhood insignificant. I mean, you go off to college as a young woman, go off to college, and what they're going to be taught there is you need to get an education and get a career, and you don't need a man. You don't need a life, you don't need a child, you don't need any of those things until you want to bring them into your life. And let me tell you something, that is an empty life. And it's an empty life if a guy goes off to college and spends his first 20 years and gets a job and spends his first 20 adult years making a living and then decides he's going to have a family and raise children. That's not how God designed us. That's not what makes us healthy people. Let me give you a positive version of verse 8, though. And I want to give respect to all the children who are giving honor to mom today. Verse 8 talks about how if you don't do it, this is what you are. Verse 8, I want to say that. But if anyone, this is my version of it. This is not from the Bible. This is my paraphrase. But if anyone provides for his own mother, he has upheld the faith and is an example in speech and conduct. And I see a lot of men and women here to honor their mothers and care for them and love them and are good to them. And you're to be honored for that. You are an example in speech and in conduct. And so may all moms be honored on this day Because God honors you. But let's wrap up with this final thought. One final thought. The best honor, you know, think about this, ladies and gentlemen, the best honor you can give to your mom is to become a Christian and to be an example in speech and conduct. Because you see, every mother's deepest desire, every good mother's deepest desire, it's not that their children are beautiful or they're smart or that they're successful and all those things are great and they're wonderful, but that's not their deepest desire. You know what their deepest desire is? That you be a Christian and that you live for the eternal inheritance with God. That is every good mom's desire. And so if you're a child that needs to become a Christian, maybe you need to start by being baptized into Christ, or maybe you need to restart the journey. You've got off target. You've got off path at some point. You need to restart. Now's a good time to get back on the track, back to honoring your mom and honoring your God. If we can help you be right with God in any way, please come while we stand and sing.